and Mark Steiner here on WEAA. The Intersection is back in the house. They were here this summer when they were preparing to grill the candidates for mayor, which they did a phenomenal job at. We'll talk about that. We'll reintroduce them to you, talk about what this program is all about. Eric Burrell is back with us, 11th grader at Ace High School. Is that right?
Yes.
I've got it right. Takira White, sophomore at City College.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. And Naomi Cornish, junior at Baltimore Freedom Academy.
Yes.
Good to have you all in the studio. And, of course, in our studios, Yasmin Mumby, who is co-executive director of The Intersection, first time on the show. Good to have you
Thank you.
Who's director of community engagement at KIPP Ujima Village.
KIPP Baltimore.
KIPP Baltimore.
Yes.
Take the Ujima away. And Zeke Berzoff-Cohen, co-executive director of The Intersection and working towards a master's degree in public policy now at the Johns Hopkins Institute for Policy Studies.
Hey, Mark.
Hey. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, welcome. Good to have you all in the studio here.
Thanks.
So let's start this way. Before we leap into the stuff you've been doing and your thoughts about the mayoral's debate that you conducted, which I thought was just phenomenal. I was sitting in the bleachers watching, which is one of the best run debates in the whole, I thought one of the best ones, and I will talk about why I think that. But let me go first to the, we won't talk to them too much, to sort of grown-ups in the room here, Zeke and Yasmin. To talk a bit about what it is, about the founding of The Intersection, I mean, in all seriousness, what you did, why you founded this group with these young people.
Do you want to go first?
Sure, I'll go.
Yasmin.
I'm Yasmin, Director of Community Engagement at KIPP Baltimore, but I didn't begin there. I started as a teacher in Baltimore City at one of the KIPP schools, KIPP Ujima Village Academy. I was the history teacher. And coming fresh out of college, I'm born and raised in this area. I love it. Won't leave. I noticed that there was a disconnect with my students. I noticed that what they were learning in the classroom wasn't necessarily transferring into the way in which they lived their lives. In particular, the community in which I taught within was predominantly African American. And the students would come to school, and I would notice that there was a tremendous amount of self-hatred and lack of self-pride that existed within. And as a history teacher, I thought, okay, how can I address this with my curriculum? How can I do this given the role that I'm in? What difference can I make? I'm 21 years old. What can I do? And I didn't really understand that until one day I was waiting for the bus with my kids, and the question of identity came up. And mm-hmm. my students looked at me and they said, you know, what are you? I mean, what does it mean to be African American? Are you African American? And you know, at 21 years old, I'm thinking, well, what is the meaning of this question? And really, what it got at to was the issue that our students, or many of them that I taught, were not sound in who they were, and because they did not have that foundation, they weren't comfortable with themselves, and they weren't able to then reach into the potential power within themselves and become more than what they are. And I mean that in the sense that it was holding them back, because they didn't know their true selves, they didn't know their history. So I approached that with my curriculum. I immediately went into my planning, changed everything that night, and for the next 2 years crafted this program that took my kids on a transformative journey that really got at the heart of their identity, that really got at the heart of their history, and with that aim in mind that they were going to leave my classroom stronger in mind, mentally liberated than they were when they came in. And I did that through making the curriculum being very, very hands-on. I had students create an Underground Railroad quilt that they hand-sewed. Can you imagine a bunch of eighth graders hand-sewing a quilt? I mean, that's just, mm-hmm. They weren't interested in that at first, to say the least. But they got interested because they understood that it resonated within them. We published a book together called Ujima Voices, The History of Our People. And it was a compilation of personal narratives that my students gathered from their family ancestral histories and stories, and through them valuing their stories and their history, they're able to value themselves. And for me as a teacher, that was my goal. So coming out of the classroom, I figured, well, why stop here? Why does this have to stay within my classroom? I'm sure there are many other teachers that feel this the same way. I taught with many of them, and I knew many of them, and one of them was Zeke Cohen. And we met through our teaching program, Teach for America, and we too had that same goal in mind that we were going to, through our curriculum, we were going to address some need with our students. And we figured that why should this be confined to our classrooms? Why can't we extend this beyond? And that is what the intersection has done for us. It's been a space in which we can extend our knowledge that we gain in the classroom to other students that necessarily were not within our classroom. And it's aimed towards the empowerment and the building of leadership skills within individual students outside of what they would normally get within a traditional school setting.
Jake, you have anything left to say? I'm just kidding. No, I'm serious.
She speaks better than I do, but...
Well, no, what you described was really powerful because part of what you're talking about also is that the challenge, you being challenged as a black woman.
Yes.
Are you black?
I mean, I am, right? Yes.
I think you are.
But
yes.
That should have been apparent to my students, and it wasn't. Right. And that was hurtful.
Right, right.
So I guess where I came into this, I also taught in West Baltimore in Sandtown Winchester, which, as I'm sure many of your listeners know, is a really economically challenged community suffering from really high rates of unemployment. And the largest youth employer in that neighborhood is the drug market. And so when I would drive to school each day, I would look out on these corners and see these young men and boys slinging product. And I would think about my own students and think, wow, you know, what happened that I taught middle school? You know, what happened between eighth grade and, you know, honestly, some of these kids were in ninth grade, 10th grade, 11th grade. What happened that this entire population of kids has been cut off from the pipeline to college and is now straight on the pipeline to prison or worse? And that really resonated with me. And with Yasmin, I came to this realization that we have this large population of students in Baltimore City that are not being reached through the traditional pedagogical approach and that they need something different and something which really speaks to them and gives them that sense of, like Yasmin was talking about, that sense of ownership over their history and also the ability to do something for someone else. Because I think that in this city, we so often think of our young people as either the problem or victims, and we don't spend enough time thinking of them as the only solution to the world that they're about to inherit. So that was sort of my own thinking behind the intersection, is to create this new program and this new space for our young people to do the incredible things that we all know that they're capable of and to really take back what's been lost over all these years in Baltimore City.
So when we had the intersection earlier this year, it was while they were organizing and registering people to vote and doing your community garden and the other work you were doing. And then we met again before you had your mayoral forum, then you had your mayoral forum, where you invite all the candidates. And the only one who didn't show up was the one who won. So you're shaking your head to Kira, why?
Because that really upset us, like to think that we're doing all of this to basically kind of help you but help the community to get a better understanding of how are you going to actually do your job, and then for you not to show up because of if whatever reason you have, that really upsets us, and it makes us feel like you really don't care. I don't want to say that because I know, I don't know if that's her thinking, but that's how we perceived it, so... I mean, it disappointed us, but, I mean, I guess we just have to understand.
Let's talk about that for a minute. I mean, so Naomi, Eric, what do you understand from that? What does it say to you?
That she's not very interested into Baltimore City schools. It's very hurting to, like, me and everybody else. I'm pretty sure, like, all the students, like, where's the mayor? When is our school going to get fixed? When is she going to come visit us? I haven't seen her, like, never, not once in my life, living in Baltimore City. And it's very hurting. And I was expecting her to come to our mayoral forum, but she didn't come, so.
Eric.
And I expected to see her there because, like Takira was saying, we was doing that to help her and help the people get to know each other, because a lot of people say the mayor doesn't do this, the mayor doesn't do that, but at the same time, we can't be like, oh, the mayor doesn't do that, because we don't know nothing about the mayor. We asked her to come. She didn't come. And we was really hurt because we really wanted to have the mayor there, because if the candidates could come, why can't you come? You're also running to become mayor. And I just think, hold on. And well, I just think it's saying something about you. Like, you don't have time for all the people who really want the chance to get into the community, get into everything, who's actually trying to make a difference and make a try. And it's just like, oh, I don't care. And it just somewhat shot us down.
So during the summer, you registered, what is it, 118
voters.
118 voters. And so for our listeners who haven't heard this, and then I'll talk about the garden, and then I'm going to talk about what it is you want to, you see coming in the future, that stuff you want to do in your view of where the city is now. But you as a group, the Intersection, the Youth of Intersection, coming from a number of neighborhoods across, mostly the east side, but a lot of neighborhoods, representing lots of different high schools, went out into this one area and registered 118 people who have never registered before, who were non-voters, until you reached out there. And talk about that experience. Talk about what that did for you.
It was surprising. Like in that one little area, 118 people, like, that just shows that nobody wasn't really interested into voting because they didn't know how important it was. And they didn't know that if they voted, their community could change just like that. But we had to go around and explain to them. And it was pretty hard because we got some very, very, very people that didn't want to listen, slammed the door in your face, didn't care what you said. But it took time to develop, like, the confidence to go to somebody's door and tell them what we do. And that is important to vote. So, yeah.
I mean,
just jump in, either one of you. Go ahead.
Piggybacking off of what Naomi said, it's just like, it was a really accomplishing thing. Like, to know that you just helped 118 people get closer to fixing their community, to getting answers to their questions. So it was really like, wow, I just registered all these people. I feel a sense of, like, pride.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's just all of the projects in general, it just really stood out. Like, we making a difference. We're not the bad kids. We're the good kids. So
no, you're not bad kids. You're not the bad kids, nor are you bad kids. Eric, what are you going to say?
And I agree with Takira was saying. And now we're not seen as bad. We're not seen as we're always doing bad. Now we're actually seen as a hope to the new generation and everything else, because going out there was really hard, but at the same time it was really rewarding to see all of that you put together actually come out and make, and what's the word?
A difference.
Yeah, make a difference.
There you go.
To make a difference, and then seeing everybody in the community who didn't want to do it, but then you end up getting them to do it, it shows that we have what it takes to get people to come together and become a real community and turn Maryland or Baltimore to where we want to live, a place where everyone can enjoy living without it being all these issues and problems.
Now, when you ran the mayoral forum, each one of you got up and asked a question.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And each one of you also got up and told a story, in a sense.
Yes.
Yes.
That opened the question up for them to listen to. And I thought those stories were very powerful. And they were your stories. They were who you are. Right?
Yes.
Right? And so, and some of our listeners may have heard this. Are you ready to do a little bit of that?
Sure.
I mean,
I want people to get a sense of what you said to them, and because then you set this question up by talking about stories that came out of your heart, out of your home, out of your life, putting it out there for people to hear. And I think they're really important for people to hear our young people's stories, because, you know, young people are about to rule the world, as we can see. We'll talk a bit about that later, what's going on in New York and Wall Street and in Spain and in Egypt, and you're the same people.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We'll get into that a little bit. But share for our listeners the stories.
Okay.
Who wants to start? We'll start here with Naomi Cornish.
Yeah. My name is Naomi Cornish. I'm an 11th grader at Baltimore Freedom Academy. And my story begins with my dad being a single parent living in a house with four kids and trying to provide for everybody. And since I was in the middle and my sister was in the middle, he wasn't really worried about us, so we had each other. And since, like, I was growing up and I didn't really know, I was kind of confused because I didn't know what it means to be a woman because my mother wasn't around. And, like, it was weird because, like, I didn't know what it meant. And, like, for me, like, I can't just go to my dad and just ask him a woman question. Like, that's just weird. And then, like, one day we went bra shopping and he didn't know anything. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And then, like different things. I didn't know, like, what am I going to change? Like, I'm changing acne, like, what girls go through. And I didn't know. So I had my sister, and she told me everything. And, like, I was fine. And then that's how, like, I came into the intersection. I felt myself. I knew who I wanted to be. I grew up, like, I'm growing up now as a powerful young lady, and I'm very smart. And, like, it's all thanks to the intersection and my sister and everything else.
And before we jump down the line, one of the things, when you say I'm very smart and you said thanks to the intersection, you're talking about you had a realization that you are smart.
Yes, like, I never knew that, like, some stuff that I didn't know, because Baltimore City Schools are not teaching us what we need to know. And, like, it was just a whole bunch of things that anybody could know, even in school, to get their education, because it's like a life lesson. And, like, it was just amazing. Like, yeah, like, but I'm smart.
You are smart. No question about it. Takira White.
Yes, well, as Mr. Mark just said, I'm Takira. I'm a sophomore at City College, and My story is kind of different because I had no clue what the intersection was when I first came. I really didn't even know the name of the organization. I just came and thought we were going to build this garden. I came in there with some working clothes. I was prepared for the dirt and the sweat and the hard work. And I got there, and it's a group of people just sitting in a circle. And we're just talking about issues. I think when I came in, we were talking about Malcolm X. So I'm sitting here like, well, what does Malcolm X have to do with building a community garden? I mean, he was an activist, not a gardener. So I'm sitting here, and as I'm listening, trying to, like, get a feel of what this program actually is, I sit there and I'm like, so not what I expected. So many smart people and so many different personalities. And for all of us to just come together despite of, like, where we came from. I know I grew up East Baltimore all my life over by John Hopkins, so it was a really tough neighborhood. Like, I was always the smart one. So when I was in school, I was kind of introverted. I didn't talk to anybody like that. I was just sitting there doing my work or whatever. I never spoke up about anything. I was just a bump on the log, basically. But as I got older, a lot of things started to change because I felt the need to say something, even though I really didn't know how, because I've been quiet for all my life. Now I'm like, it's time for a change. So around, like, last summer, a lot of stuff just blew everything away. I mean, I had to move, so I'm no longer around the people that I did feel a little comfortable with. I'm in this new neighborhood. I'm like, well, what am I going to do? I'm so by myself. And so then I really felt alone this summer because I lost my grandfather. So it was like I just lost my best friend. And it was 2 weeks before the mayoral reform, so I'm like, what am I going to do? I don't know if I want to do this anymore. I had all types of thoughts just going through my head. But at the end of the day, I did it because I did it for my grandfather. I know that if he was still here, he would want me to continue doing great things in my community. He would want for me to be as successful as possible. So I just really give a lot of thanks to the intersection just for helping me to speak up and speak out and just find my voice, like, find who and what I can really be. So Yeah.
There you are. Eric.
And
Eric Burrell.
Hi, my name is Eric Burrell. The intersection really did help me discover that my voice does matter. And because at first I didn't really did think my voice mattered at all. I used to be really quiet, especially before I came to the intersection. I never would talk to anyone. And a summer ago when I was in the Maryland Leadership Workshop, everyone there really didn't know me, and they all just kept on saying I was quiet and nice. And to me, I hated those words. Those words are, like, they're just horrible to describe a person with, especially when I'm beyond being quiet. I do like talking about my beliefs, and I do really stand up for what I believe in, but no one really knew that. But now, since I've joined the intersection, I have spoken in front of a mayoral forum, a district candidate forum, and the CPHA. And there, that crowd was the hardest because I had to really change my personal narrative around to how the intersection really did change my life. And now I'm the student president of the Gay Straight Alliance, and I'm trying to put ends to all the gay prejudice I see in my school towards me and other students. And telling that to a crowd of older people, I thought maybe they might not like it, but actually I was surprised. They was giving me time when I was messing up. They was like, oh, take your time and everything. And I think because one of the reasons was seeing me so young talking about this issue and so energetic about it, I think that's where most of it came from. And after that, I have gotten so many business cards about that, and they all are telling me, oh, well, get your group to call me, get the group to call me, or if you ever need anything, just call me and let me know, and I will help you. So, yeah.
So here we are with the intersection, and one of the things we'll explore in the course of the hour. We want you to join us here, by the way, at 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Your thoughts and questions for these young people, for the people working with them. We want to hear, we're going to be exploring a number of things. I want to look at some issues facing the city, see how the young people in the intersection relate to those issues, what their ideas are about them. They relate to the upheaval we see around this country, around the world, as being fueled by young people and all over the place. And talk about those new projects we're working on the west side coming up. In some kind of unique cross-cultural dialogue and what they plan to do in this coming year, which is going to be an interesting thing to watch. So I want you all to join us here, 410-319-8888, just for the voices of Naomi Cornish, Takira White, and Eric Burrell, who are all members of the intersection, also with us, Yasmin Bumby. Yasmin.
Yes.
I got to put the mun. It's a mun. It's mean. Yasmin Bumby and Zeke Berzov-Cohen are two co-directors of the intersection. So stay with us. Oh, before we say to stay with us, I got to tell you something else on the way out to stay with us. I want to remind you all that a tradition continues with the second annual WEAA Gospel Grace Benefit Concert featuring the legendary Lady Tremaine Hawkins. Also performing will be the Morgan State University Choir. This will be Sunday, October 30th at 6 p.m. at the Murphy Fine Arts Center. Ticket information at Ticketmaster.com, Ticketmaster Outlets, or 410-547-SEAT. Presented by Morgan's MBA program and public radio to be EAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative started by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development, giving you the possibility of owning a home in Baltimore City. What they can do is pretty amazing. So you can call 1-800-638-7781 for more information for the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative, Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development, 1-800-638-7781. We're joined in studio this hour by The Intersection. Intersection is a group of young student activists in this community, and students in our public high school system. Three of those young people are with us this hour. Eric Burrell, who's an 11th grader at Ace High School. Takira White is a sophomore at City College. And Naomi Cornish, a junior at the Baltimore Freedom Academy. And the two people who founded this are Yasmeen Mumbi, who's co-executive director of The Intersection, along with Zeke Berzov-Cohen. Yasmeen is director of community engagement at KIPP. Mm-hmm. And Zeke is now, was a school teacher and is now working toward a master's degree in public policy at the Johns Hopkins Institute for Policy Studies. Number here is 410-319-8888. Enter into dialogue with these young people. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. 410-319-8888. So, you know, when you look at what the city faces and what you face in the city, let's just take some examples. We had a show yesterday with Luis Rodriguez, who was a former L.A. gang member and a really wonderful, brilliant writer, poet, activist. And we were talking about the issue of gangs, what young people have to go through just coming through their neighborhoods. And I just reflect for a minute just on your lives and the neighborhoods you live in and grow up in. And you are three young people trying to do your best to make it through to the other side, as someone said. And I'm curious what that world, what that world's like for you every day that you see it, live through it.
It's really hard sometimes because we are individuals and people don't really like seeing individuals walking down the street or anything. Like, it's hard to be yourself. Like, sometimes you have to think, oh, let me look a little different or let me walk a little different when you're walking past a certain crowd. Because, and just because you're different, most likely they'll want to do something bad to you or anything. Like, when I go around my father's house, I have to dress just like normal. I can't dress how I like to dress. I can't.
What does that mean, you have to dress normal, not like you want to dress? What does that mean?
And, well, I have to wear baggy jeans and a shirt or something. Like, I can't put on anything colorful or anything dark or anything. Like, I can't do too bright or then, oh, they're all going to want to jump me. Or if I can't do anything too dark or, oh, he's one of those devil worshippers, let's get him. And so, like, it's really hard being an individual around certain areas just because no one likes individuals, really. No, everybody's afraid of something new and something different. And it's really hard to get that through people's heads and everything.
Mm-hmm. Gangs. Such a shame. Like, so many of, like, people that I hang out with now, mm-hmm. it's like a lot of them used to be in gangs. And it's like, to see that transformation, it's like, well, if you can do it and you're like this now, what's going on with the rest of Baltimore? Like, come on now. What is the purpose of you being in a gang? That's what friends are for. A gang is not gonna do anything for you but get you in a whole lot of trouble
or get you hurt. You know, kids who are in gangs.
Oh, of course.
People
I have
you know.
Family
in gangs.
That's
right?
In gangs. It's sad. Like, you can't wear a certain color outside. Like, I know in my old neighborhood around Clay Courts, my favorite color was red.
And you couldn't wear red.
If I wore red, a whole gang of people would just follow me down the street. It was sad. Like,
red was a gang color. It was a Crips color.
No, that's the Bloods color.
The Bloods color.
The Crips color is the blue.
It's the blue, so I'm sorry, I got it backwards. Right.
But it was really sad. Like, so I come outside with a red shirt, my little blue jeans, and my little red Converses. What you got on red for? It's my favorite color. Why can't I wear a color? So you're going to let a color get in between you hurting me and me walking to the corner store. Are you serious? And remind you, this is when I'm like 11 years old, and the people who asking me these questions, they like boys who like 16, and they way bigger than me, and you asking me why am I wearing red? Come on now. That's ridiculous. It's just sad to see that so many of our young people are just falling and dropping because of gangs. Like, it's no point for it.
Yeah. Like, every day when I go home, it's that one corner full of gang people. Like it's no rest. Like, it's no rest. It doesn't rest. All night, all day. This is what I guess they have to do. As soon as I'd be scared to walk to my house because I don't know what's going to happen. Like, gangs, they just feel the need to do what they have to do as to, like, impress somebody. Just to get somebody, like, oh, I'm somebody, I can do this. this is what I can do. You see where I'm coming from? Like, it's just like a something to be into. Like, every time I go home, I walk home, I see somebody on my step. I stand there and be like, what should I do? And then, like, I ask them to move, and they be like, no. I'm like, can I get in my house? And they be like, no. I'm like, why not? And then, like, it's just so much. And then, like, I had to let some of my friends go because they was gang violence. Like, it's just gang violence everywhere. Like, one of my friends got killed in gang violence. And, like, it was just crazy because, like, I was just with you the other day. And, like, you was talking about changing and everything else. And, like, it just really affected me. And I was like, why? Why? And then, like, it's just, like, I be worried about myself because nobody cares. Like, just because you're in a gang doesn't mean that you have to do all these certain things. And, like, every year, it's talking about, like, Halloween, they be like, oh, yeah, like, 100 people are going to die because we're in a gang. Like, I heard that last year. They killed people. Some people call blood people killed, like, women mm-hmm. on Halloween. And, like, I was scared to go trick-or-treating because I like trick-or-treating. And I was grown up, and I was a young lady, and I didn't want them to mistake me as a grown woman. And, like, I was scared to go trick-or-treating. Like, it was just so many stuff that was going on, and I was scared. Like, gang violence, why are you doing this?
And you felt the same thing? You were shaking your head, yes.
That's
same
true.
Same stories?
Because my cousin, he's a pirate, but he knows everything that happens, like, with the bloods and all that stuff. And so we going out trick-or-treating, and it's like, we had to roll, like, 20 deep. It was about 20 of us. I mean, we were so scared because apparently what they do is if your family member, they hit home. These are some ruthless people. Like, if you have the heart to kill somebody in your family, like somebody that's so close to you, and you have the heart to kill them over somebody that you probably just met last week to get in a gang, I don't see where your heart is. That's mm-hmm. to me, that is one of the most disrespectful and dishonorable things you can possibly do, to kill somebody in your own family, to kill somebody, period. Like, for what? But if somebody was to come up and shoot you, you have a problem with it. That I don't understand where everybody get this thing that it's cool to be in a gang, it's cool to shoot people, it's cool to throw up signs and stuff and get kicked out of parties, and the whole party got to stop because you want to be an idiot. Thanks a lot.
Let me open the phones, and I want Yasmin to jump in anytime you like as well, but let me open the phones here and get a listener here and let you jump in. 410-319-8888. We have the young people from the intersection on, and two, the adults who started this program are co-founders. 410-319-8888. And we're going to talk a bit and explore what they're about to do this year and the kind of things they're looking forward to in the intersection. And Kathy, you're on the air.
Oh, good evening.
Good evening, Kathy.
Greetings to your panelists. I'm listening to the show, as I always do, as I'm driving.
And
I have the biggest smile on my face as I'm listening to these young people. I am so proud of the insight that they've gained at such an early age. These are life lessons that, unfortunately, a lot of people much older in life don't get. The lesson of how powerful your own voice is, about how your view is important, and your view may be actually the turning point that someone else needs to hear in order to get them on the right track. And I just wanted to call and encourage the young people that are there tonight to just continue to be an example to those of your peers and even some elders in your community, because by your example, you're going to be able to really allow other people to also find their voice. So I just wanted to call and encourage you guys. I'm loving hearing your insight and the way that you are able to convey your feelings. I just think it's really, really awesome and truly a hope for our future.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kathy.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
So tell me, before we jump into some other issues I want to ask you all about and what you were thinking about, let's talk to the five of you. I mean, where do you want the intersection to go from here? You had this summer where you were registering people to vote, ran a community garden, which I think is an incredible idea, and ran the mayor's forum, really worked at that. So where do you want to go now? Where's it going to go?
So,
Zeke.
I think that the greatest challenge that we're facing, both as a city and in our own organization, is what I've thought of as the slow death of hope. We see it in the rising poverty rate. The Baltimore Sun just said one quarter of the city is now living in poverty. And we find it in the abysmal voter turnout. You know, we were all disappointed to find that one in five residents in our city elected the mayor, decided who was going to be our next leader. And that's just, quite frankly, too low. And
one in five of the registered voters, not even right. The eligible voters, which is even more
right.
people.
Right. And what that says to me is that as a city, we're losing this battle. People are starting to lose hope. What my students so eloquently talked about is the challenge of getting people to believe in something. And I think it reflects this shared feeling among folks living in poverty in these communities that no matter what we do and no matter who we elect, be it Barack Obama or Stephanie Rawlings Blake, that come tomorrow, I'm going to wake up with the same police sirens outside of my window. I'm going to still be in a rat and roach infested apartment, and I'll still suffer the same health maladies because of the asbestos and the lead paint poisoning that we found in a lot of houses that these young people documented, and nothing will have changed. And I think that this sense of hopelessness has been built up over years and over generations, to the point where a lot of our elder citizens have lost that civic voice that Kathy was talking about and that our young people from the intersection are so able to express. And when you've lost that voice, it's like, so why would my vote matter? Mm-hmm. Who's even listening? And I think that often what goes unsaid is a lot more powerful than what's said. If you think about that expression of disinvestment that only one in five, like you said, voters registered.
And we didn't even have to wait that long to figure out that that the sense of slow death of hope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Naomi, you alluded to that when you said that when you were going out door to door, knocking on doors, trying to get people to register to vote, what response did you get?
No.
Bam. And the bam was the slam of the door.
Yes.
So we didn't have to wait for that data to come out. And unfortunately, that's what we felt this whole entire summer, which is why we worked so incredibly hard.
Mm-hmm.
But what you were talking about with the slow death of hope in this community, I think that my friend David Simon, who wrote The Wire and wrote Tremé, and put those on television, likened what's happening in inner city America to a slow Holocaust of people's lives,
mm-hmm.
because it's not just death by shooting,
right.
It's the death of the soul that you see, right?
Mm-hmm.
But can I give you a quick example before we get back to these guys? What struck me every day driving this summer on Fayette Street to the intersection was, and y'all remember this, there's the big sign on that brick building that reads Volunteers of America,
mm-hmm.
right? And so, you know, I see that and I'm thinking, because I've seen how eager and excited my students are to engage and volunteer, I think, you know, wow, this would be great for this community to have Volunteers of America, to have an organization right here, right next to New Hope where we're organizing. And I know this organization could add tremendous value to the neighborhood, which, again, is the New Hope community. But the building is shuttered. And from what I've been told, gangs use it as a stash house to hide their drugs. And you've got to wonder about the psychological impact and the toll that that takes on a community when they're constantly being told through messages like their volunteer organization shutting down that you don't matter, that you're not a priority. And, you know, I think we have a tendency to think of what happens out in our streets as random or luck or unluck or whatever, but these are political choices that we've made, and I think that as a city we need to start confronting them and really dealing with what's going on, because Fayette Street doesn't look the way Fayette Street does out of the blue. It got that way.
And so I'm curious, what you then we'll go to the back. There's a phone caller, Maria. We'll come to your call in a second. I'm just curious what the young folks in your section here think about what it takes to transform the city. What do you intend to do? I mean, you know, if you three can walk through your neighborhoods and transform yourselves, and many people do that. I mean, not alone people. I bet tons of young people who've been through the Baltimore Urban Debate League and other programs. Really, people kind of take hold of their lives and say, "No, this is a better way." So, how do you broaden that? How do you make that? You can't make it totally universal, perhaps, but make it more universal than it is. So that
I think about my past, and that's not where I want to be. I look on TV and be like, "Hey, I want to be like that. I want to have money in my pocket. I want to do this. I want to have a big house." But how am I going to do that living in this community? Like, I have something that motivates me, and I try to motivate my friends. I'm like, "This is not where you want to be. We can, like, if we ever win the lottery, like the movie Lottery, we could come back to our community and, like..."
Don't hold your breath to win the lottery.
Yeah. Like, bring back to our community. We can raise money, like, fundraiser. This is what we got to do, and especially as young people, because money is not going to fall out of the sky. We have to work about it. We have to make a chart, like, this is what we're going to do. Yeah.
Naomi, you hit at a core that I really identify with, the fact that it's not a fact of you running away from your origin, from your history, from who you are, or mm-hmm. from your community. It's a matter of coming back and mm-hmm. improving it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think that's exactly what everybody should kind of see. But it's sad that some people don't like really open their eyes to see that. Like, every community has the potential of being something good. It's just the amount of time and the amount of patience that you have with that community. Now, it's probably so many people that we don't even know about, and sitting in that community is probably listening to us right now and like, "I want my community to change," but they don't know how to do it. So what we are going to do is we are going to bring this not only to the east side but to the west side to try to broaden our experiences. We're going to try to expand it as much as possible, because the more people that can get the insight that we have now, the better. That's going to give everybody has their own story, so everybody's going to have their own motivation. And if we could, like, pinpoint everybody's motivation, this city would be amazing. Like, it would be something that the world would just want to hear about. Baltimore could be so much better. It could be actually Baltimore instead of Baltimore-less.
Oof.
So, I mean, it's just, I just have so much hope for this city. I'm not leaving. I can't leave. It's just where my heart's at. I can't leave.
That's beautiful. Eric, go ahead.
Well, I believe a lot of people do want to do things and do want to change it, but at the same time, they quit. They give up really fast because they lose one battle. Like, you can't just lose. I mean, just because you lose, you can't just quit. You can't just give up. You have to keep on moving and keep on trying, because we won't win every battle. But the more we keep on trying, the better we will come at it. And we learn from those experiences we do lose, and so we can change and make it better. Because I know it's a lot of people out there that probably do want to change stuff, but they don't know how. Two, they're afraid what other people will think of them. And then they just know, they just have that thing in their head like, "Oh, maybe it might not happen. Maybe we just might lose and we just look dumb for trying," or whatever. And I feel like if we could change that and show them that it is still hope and give them that type of hope, I think we would live in a place where is actually decent enough, where we don't complain about everything, but we actually do something about it.
Let me open the get another call here. I went to the, I'll let you jump in as well. 410-319-8888. Maria, you're on the air.
Peace and blessings.
Welcome.
Peace and blessings. Hello.
Welcome.
Hi. The gang, I commend the young people that's on the radio. I respect them to the utmost. To see them get up and stand up, what they're doing. I like to say that even though there is a gang problem, but I believe it's overrated and I believe it's being exploited. Because I lived in California, they did the same thing. There were police officers going out killing people and then blaming it on gang members to cause a rift. And this, the same thing is happening in Baltimore City. You've got a lot of bodies in the morgue that are unidentified, but they're labeling them as gang-related when it's not. You have people exploiting the gang situation for their own purpose. You got police officers making it look bigger than what it is, so the city can hire more police officers.
Now, I hear what you're saying, Maria, but we've really looked into that, and I've not seen. I hear what you're saying. I'm not saying that.
Who am I speaking to, Mark Steiner?
Yeah, you are.
Okay, let me tell you something, Mark Steiner. You say you hear what I'm saying, but you don't live in my community. You don't see what we see. And, you know, it behooves me, whenever we talk about our situation, you know, a European going to come in and tell us how it is in our community. I'm 56, and I've seen what it is in my community.
Right. I'm not trying to tell anybody what is going on in the community. What I'm saying is that I hear what you're saying. I think that could be real. A lot of people have looked into it. Lots of folks have looked into it about the nameless bodies in the morgue. And I want to know more about that. I mean, it's a serious accusation to make about what's happening in the city.
Well, look, I went down a couple of years ago. A lot of us, we demonstrated in front of the morgue because of it.
I remember that.
When they were killing black women up in the Park Heights community, and they were trying to say there was no serial killer, they were saying that there were no bodies of women coming in the morgue being killed. Now, I called the state's attorney office. I called several offices. They told me that was not true until after Ham's daughter was murdered. Then the story came out. Dar Muhammad was putting the story out there. They was trying to say he was lying and everything. And then
okay, well, Mary, let me just say, I don't want to detract from what these young people are doing today. So, but I think this is a subject that deserves a conversation. But I think I don't want to take away from where. What we're trying to do here today with these young people, but I think what you're saying deserves a conversation on the air, and it's not being dismissed. It does deserve a conversation because it was raised during the mayoral campaign. It was raised in your mayoral debate, if I remember right.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. It's just like the thought of that is it's clicking, but it's not clicking. Like, why? And, like, when she's talking about exploiting the thing, like, of gang violence, then, like, I'm pretty sure that everybody sees where we're coming from. If you're putting it on the wire, then, and then especially in front of, like, our own communities in Baltimore City, like, I'm really sure that you see where it's coming from, especially, like, people writing books about it. Stories, like I'm telling my story, Takir is telling her story, Eric's telling his story. I'm pretty sure you visualize like what I'm saying. So like anybody that thinks about this is just crazy. Like I'm pretty sure like nobody wants to live like this. And like it's just sad just to visualize like, oh, it's not safe going to a community like this. Why? Like it's just not fair. It's not fair.
So where do you all want to see this thing go in this next year? What comes next? What comes next for the intersection? And
so no longer will they be student organizers. What will you all be next session?
Student trainers. We are going to train
other students,
the other students, to become student organizers like ourselves. So it's going to be very interesting to meet all of these new people.
Because yeah. I remember when you were here last, one of the things that you were intensely talking about was the problem of, if I remember correctly, environmental justice.
Yes.
Right?
That was my question also at the mayoral forum. It was just so appalling to see the amount of just decay in the city. It's not even like it's just like just one set of destroyed community. It's a big, broad span of just communities that were allowed to decay. And my thing is, like Mr. Cole said, this didn't happen, like, by luck. It didn't happen by unluck. It happened because of the decisions that the officials made. You, it's nowhere in the world a community could get like that from just the common people alone. It's no way. Nobody would want to even destroy. Why would you want to destroy where you live? Mm. So, I mean, it's just something to really think about, like, how did my community get like this? I know a lot of older people, like, I have a lot of older people as friends, and I talk to them a lot because I like to know about things that happened in the past to kind of bring it to the future. And as I'm talking to older folk, they're like, well, this neighborhood wasn't like this such and such years ago. And I'm like, well, what in the world happened? Mm-hmm. Because this community needs some serious work. So we took that. And this summer, we documented it through photos. And the reaction we got from those photos were very...
It's telling us that we need to break. So we need to come back to the intersection and find out what's going to happen in this next year.
Sure.
And look forward to following the work of the intersection over the course of the year and what you do and bringing some other people on and giving you some stuff to go out there and tell the stories and bring them back so you can share this with all of our listeners.
Cool.
It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Takira White, Eric Burrell, Naomi Cornish, mm-hmm. The Intersection, and the two founders of The Intersection, Zeke Berzov-Cohen and Yasmin Mumbi. Thank you so much. I'm sorry, baby. Good to have you all here. This has been great. And we will continue this conversation with The Intersection over the course of the year and find out what they do next, where they're going to go, how they're going to affect the community and the people in those communities and their own lives as well.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Thanks. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Cricket Aronson. Our intern today is Elizabeth Walker. We're engineered by Zachary Coleman. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear information about our listeners and the work that they do, and hear new interviews you won't hear on the radio, please join us at steinershow.org on the web. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.
Join WEAA for a complimentary bus ride to the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Dedication Ceremony, Sunday, October 16th. You must be a current WEAA member. For information, 443-885-2075. Brought to you by Pullen's Tour Service, Morgan MBA Program, Baltimore Community Foundation, McDonald's Family Restaurants of Greater Baltimore, and Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
Hi, I'm John Tegler, and I have the pleasure of being the host of Jazz Straight Ahead here on WEAA, a series that features the fun and excitement of America's only indigenous art form, that music called jazz. Whether it's combos, vocalists, or big bands, you'll...